the two businesses you got to stay away from, you know, new technologies, okay, particularly the ones that are connected to AI, because it's going to be very unstable, and the other one is real estate.
My focus would be more on being hedged against a eventual market collapse, because we're more fragile than we were probably at any point in the last 20 years. So if not, you know, 30 years, we're very fragile. And also, you've got to realize that the big rally that was in the S&P 500 over the past 12 months is attributable to a very small number of firms linked to AI. Remember, when the internet started, everybody used AltaVista. They were one of the pioneers, and then we switched to Google. Okay, so in other words, some existing firms have a huge capitalization, you know, gains in trillions, owing to the promise of AI, and someone else may come in and take the business away from them.
I don't know when it will come, but let's look at what we have. It's more than $100 trillion of real estate valuation. It's not, we're not at 3% mortgages. We're at 7% and going north, okay? So, and you have a lot of the methodology of the startup business changed. In the past, they used to be selling you a future cash flow. Now they're selling you future funding, like you're going to sell it to someone else. So the whole structure needs to tumble, okay? Because systems don't correct themselves without some kind of, you know, a little bit of pain. The risk is right there, okay? We know we have real estate valuation that are cannot, you know, don't make sense with interest rates, short-term rates at 5.25%. We have startups that are basically we're using the funding market to as cash machine, and it's not sustainable. The stock market is another story, because the stock market seems to have some, you know,
it's attracting more and more people, and has more. The reasons they got in, you know, are there. Okay, so nothing has changed. But all you need is just a small change in perspective. You see, to expose the fragility of it. We have valuations that are crazy, built on a lot of hope, and the economy is very confusing. You see. So on what you hear stories here and stories there. Okay, is it overheating here, or is it cooling off there? You see, so we don't have a classical environment for us to make judgments. So which is why I would say that one has to be schizophrenic, extremely bullish, while believing in a total collapse. In other words, tail risk hedging. Okay, these crises happen when you expect them the least, which is why people don't have any protection. They're overexposed to the market, and I think it's very similar to the environment we had in previous collapses. And the market becomes complacent. People are used to it. You know, they may have some kind of precaution in the beginning, but then they throw precaution to the wind, get more rally, and that's when vulnerability is going to be at its maximum.
The risk is in front of us. You see a fragile bridge, right? The bridge that's fragile. Okay, you know it's going to collapse at some point. Okay, so you need to fix it. How do you fix it? You got to reduce debt. You got to do a lot of cosmetic things that are not cosmetic, actually. Sorry.
We are coming out of an environment of very low interest rates that taught people to avoid conservative investments and go into assets that can gain in value. So people are used to investing in the market, used to like investing in the market.
Let's talk a little bit big picture, okay? 2008, we had a debt problem. No? The Fed put the interest rates at zero for 15 years. Now, lowering rates to zero made no sense. You know, they didn't try, they panicked, you know, they didn't try to lower it to 3%. They went all the way to zero. And once it's at zero, it's very hard to raise it. So now we're going to have to learn to live in an environment with higher interest rates. And 15 years, you know, that's a generation of traders, generation of finance practitioners who don't know what interest rates mean. So welcome to a new era. So new era is we have more debt than we did before. The Federal Reserve primary job is price stability. And monetary policy is something that is, you know, short term. They used that tool, right, in place of a structural reform. You see, you can't use, I mean, it's not made for that. Nope. So that's a big mistake, and we're going to pay the price.
Actually, you know, what has happened is it's more complex. It started with fooled by randomness, where people don't understand the difference between noise and signal, and mistake very often noise for signal. Things have gotten worse. Okay, the understanding of tail events has gotten worse. Okay, the pricing of tail events, what we think would be more rational, has gotten worse. Okay, people still use bad models more and more. So it is interesting. I saw that over a 25-year, you know, the life of my book collection, The Incerto, the first one being Fooled by Randomness. So I don't think that there is consciousness of risk that has improved. We just think that at any point in time that we live in a more risky period than our ancestors or any.
We have a fragile system, okay? And we have more interdependence, and it was shown during COVID, between world economies. We have more globalization, almost, you know, at its peak, so more dependence between economies. So in other words, if something collapses, it causes feedback loops. We have more debt in the Western world, relative to, particularly debt relative to growth, than we can handle. So what's bad here is that, and it's sad that, you know, as you get richer, typically, you start having more debt, but your incentive to grow isn't there anymore. So we are now probably the richest we've ever been, and we've never been had more debt.
Let's look at markets. Okay, markets are not driven by long-term economic stuff. It's driven by allocations. Okay, we, like, for example, people think that the market reflects today the impact of the tariffs and these policies that may or may not be rational. No, markets are driven by a certain allocation parameters, and people, of course, panic sometimes, but they got to satisfy these. In the long run, of course, the economy will decide, and we have severe problems. The first one being the accumulated deficit. And it's snowballing, as you know, and with interest rates here, it is adding every year to the budget, so just to stay in the same place. Plus, what has happened with a lot of modern economies is that as you get richer, you see, it's normal that your growth rate would slow down because you have fewer people in poverty in your economy. You have to import, actually, poverty from elsewhere, okay? It's like an S-curve, like a natural S-curve that we see in nature. At the top of the S-curve is when people borrow, when their growth potential is much lower, and for natural reasons. It's not nothing to do with policies. So we should be borrowing less now that we have reached sort of like almost reached destination, because the it's a what we call a decreasing growth rate, and which is normal, whereas countries in Africa and Asia are far away from that point. You see, they still have people in poverty that they got to pull up, and that will increase their GDP, and they can borrow, but they're not the ones borrowing. That would end up being reflected in stocks, the slow decline on the dollar. And effectively, the second risk, so the first one is the deficit. The second one is effectively that the dollar is losing its status as a reserve currency. You can see the accumulation of gold in the reserves and the behavior of gold over the past 12 months. And it didn't start with Trump's policies. Of course, it started with Biden when he froze the accounts of people connected to Putin. Transactions take place in dollars, euros, usually dollars, and at the same rate. However, they get converted back into gold. And we can see it from the accumulation of reserves. I think that we need to worry, maybe not about the stock market, it may express itself elsewhere. We need to worry because the approach is not very rational. First of all, they're amateurs doing numbers to start with. The other thing is when we have 4% unemployment, Think about it. You have 4% unemployment. It means the economy, what are you going to do now with these tariffs? Try to shift business from high added value into low added value? This is what we're invited to do. Well, that will depress GDP. So in other words, it's like asking a surgeon, you know, just for balance, to clean the streets one day a week, okay? So that, I mean, of course, it would depress GDP. That's exactly what the Trump administration is getting us to do. I understand tariffs. Tariffs may be necessary in many areas. Tariffs need to be symmetric and stuff like that. So this we understand. But the way they're going about it makes no sense. There's a difference between, I mean, they're not idiot and they're not specialists in that area.
Right.
And they're probably okay in what they've done in the past. Peter Navarro, I apologize, but I'll have to say that in his own domain, he hasn't fared well. Okay, the other ones had some kind of performance in an area that is orthogonal, in other words, uncorrelated to the current performance. It's like asking a dentist to do brain surgery. Okay, may do better than average. I'm not sure. Okay, So none of them really is a specialist of the area that they're discussing.
You know,
and this is where I find myself agreeing with economists, okay, that basically it makes no sense. And the approach is irrational. You see, the idea of confronting China is irrational. But now let's think about what are going to be the effects. Well, there are two things they're doing. The first one, tariffs on things that we don't produce. I mean, it's going to tax not the middle class, but it's going to class
the poorest among
the
us.
The poor, because
it's regressive.
And then it compensating that with a tax break doesn't work if you don't pay taxes.